Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
Joining me at this time is Martin Thorsson, director of Backyard Village, a new Icelandic film that recently premiered at Santa Barbara's Nordic Cinema Competition. That's where it had its US premiere. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to be talking about Backyard Village, which revolves around the meeting of two broken souls. This is just a short introduction to make sure that we don't leave any listeners out who have not seen the film yet. It revolves around the meeting between two broken souls, a man and a woman, at a guest house in a remote, or at least it looked like it was a remote, small town in Iceland to me. But both are going through traumatic experiences and problems in their lives, and their connection with one another will prove to be quite important during this difficult time. This is just a short intro, like I said. We'll get into it a bit more. But where I wanted to start off, Martin, is I've seen your previous film, XL. Stylistically, this is a very different from that one, right?
Yeah, it's on the opposite end of the spectrum. But that also has to do with, you always, when you're starting a project, you like, what's the point of view of the camera or of the storytelling? And in XL, it was pretty much all from the POV of the protagonist, because there I wanted to get into the mindset of that alcoholic mindset, and show it from his perspective. It was about a corrupt politician in Iceland. This one I wanted to, and it was fast, it was partying, it was drinking, it was cocaine, it was, you know, all kinds of things happening. But this is a more of a meditative approach, where I'm sort of looking at the characters from the outside, and they're, they're unassuming people who want to kind of not be noticed. And so the camera treats them as such. And I think every project calls for a point of view that the director chooses. I mean, where do you put the camera? Why do you put it there? And how does it relate to the story and the storytelling?
Obviously, for you as a filmmaker, then it's also about exploring different types of filmmaking. I mean, you're very willing to explore different cinematic languages, different ones, like the one that you used in XL and the one that you use in Backyard Village.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love playing around with the format of film, and to experiment. And I would love to experiment more, because one of the reasons why I fell in love with film was that it has so many options in terms of storytelling. And I think we should be doing sort of more experiments. I mean, because a lot of the stuff, for instance, that you see on the big SVOD services or on the internet now, because everything is pretty much going that way, is that you tend to feel like, for instance, Netflix and Apple and those providers, the brand starts to become pretty apparent. And the sort of same mode of storytelling, the sort of the same tempo, the same texture in sound and in visuals and all that. And I feel like we could be going back in many ways to like the 70s, for instance. I love Netflix and I watch a lot of stuff there, but I got a bit tired of it the other day, and I found The Passenger, Antonioni, and it was so refreshing. It was so refreshing just to feel, the different tempo, the different sensibilities, something that didn't really fit into the formula we're using today in a lot of entertainment.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I even on this very show, I often complain about Netflix. So you're right up my alley there. But just going back to the film, Backyard Village, we talked about the style a little bit, but, what was the starting point for the story?
The starting point for the story, it started actually not with the story. It started with the setting. It started with because I wanted to make a movie. First of all, I haven't made a movie in a while, and you know, you have several projects going on, and some of them are you know, get financed and stuff. But we wrote, me and my partner Gudmundur Óskarsson, we decided to write a story into this setting of the backyard village. Incidentally, it is a place that I own along with my wife. We've had tourists there, and so, but it's a free location, and it's in my town, and it's. So we started thinking, okay, what could we make for X amount of kronas? And so we're like, okay, we can have two people, maybe two lead actors, and we're going to shoot most of it here, and we have X many days. And okay, so how can we fit a story into that? And then what are we interested in? What sort of pressing? And and I have had myself experiences with, you know, anxiety and depression and loss and all those kinds of things. And I, you know, said to Gumi, you know, how can we create a character who is dealing with anxiety, you know, meet someone, a tourist here, and he's dealing with something else, like a loss or something like that. And then it came from that. And the story came pretty quickly, and it's a simple story, but it focuses on like human interaction and connection and how we need as human animals to have intimacy and touch and talk about things and instead of, you know, just sort of burying them down into the neither regions of the mind where, you know, you never know how they're going to turn out later in your life, how they're going to affect you.
But it is a place that you like to explore too, right? I mean, you, like you talked about how, and I suspected it, how the location itself was a starting point for you in this project. But, you know, exploring those regions of the mind, I feel like is an area of interest for you when you're developing your films, your narratives.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it maybe in the beginning when you're sort of starting out, it's not necessarily something that you realize, but I've been sort of going back to, like, this is my fourth movie, and I was looking at 1.0, which is a sci-fi mindfuck film that it was financed in Los Angeles, and then it's Rockland, and then XL, and then this one. And yeah, there is a thread of, you know, the need for human contact, the need for friendship, the need for, you know, and the loneliness. All these elements are apparent in all my movies. So, yeah, I guess I'm really interested in that. Maybe I just need a hug.
Right. And it's difficult. And it's interesting to talk about hugs and human contact at a time when essentially in various many parts of the world, these are things that have been lacking because of the pandemic, right?
Yeah, I know. And as it turns out, like, it, you know, this thing happens with the COVID, and it's almost bizarre to look at the movie now. It's like it's from a different time. It's from a, but there, I think there's never been more sort of need, exactly. I mean, I think a lot of people are isolated and alienated, and we still haven't seen the sort of what's going to come out of it psychologically for people.
Right. Absolutely.
And I hope, I mean, I hope the movie speaks to that, to people.
I think so. Yeah. So I seem to understand you're not a believer, or not that much of a believer, that virtual contact can replace human contact, to put it bluntly.
No, I mean, it can, I think for a while, I think, and for instance, I mean, it has given me an opportunity, for instance, to connect with people, friends living abroad, whether they're in Australia or Los Angeles or England or Japan or whatnot. And probably I'm more in touch with a lot of my friends, more than before. But at the end of the day, I would much rather see them in person. I mean, meetings and stuff, you know, something that's related to your business. People can do a lot of things and probably a lot more efficiently via Zoom or the channels that we have available for us. But at the end of the day, we're a social animal. And we thrive on touch and intimacy.
And Martin, in one of your earlier answers, you mentioned the term timeless. And that's incidentally what I felt your film was like. It may also have been because of the landscape and setting where the film takes place, which definitely lends it that atmosphere. But just generally speaking, are you aware of that? And did you strive to achieve that sense of timelessness for Backyard Village?
I think I try to do that in all my work. I feel like movies or most works of art are, you know, stronger when they speak to the human condition doesn't change that much. What changes is the world around us and the world that we're creating. But the basic human needs and instincts are the same and as they were, you know, 300 years ago or 1,000 years ago. It's we need the same things. We need love, we need food, we need, interaction, intimacy, like I've said many times now. And I think also the films will live longer, you know. Yeah, I think that's something that I try to do in my movies, to make them sort of timeless. I mean, this can happen anytime, except maybe in COVID. It's pretty much, it sets a certain perimeter.
Sure. Returning to the point about interaction and connection, which is obviously very important in your film, but how do you achieve that? How do you work with the actors in order to achieve a realistic representation of that? Because one of the things that I felt was very great about this film is that there is a sense of realism. When you're watching these two lead characters connect, you don't necessarily think that it's not real. It almost feels authentic. So that's something that is done very rarely in cinema when we see things like that. And I was wondering whether you did something to encourage that type of representation or to help the actors work in that way.
Oh, wow. This is, of course, you need good actors.
Let's name them and pay tribute to them. What are their names?
Yeah, Tim Plaster, was introduced to me by a mutual friend, Ólafur Darri Ólafsson, who's an actor in Iceland, and he'd been working with Tim on I think it was a BBC Viking series or 1660, I think it was called. They worked together on that, and Tim was coming to Iceland, and we hooked up. We had dinner at my house, and of course, this is in 2011, and we start talking about, you know, doing stuff together, people do, and usually nothing comes out of it, but, you know, 1% or 2% of instances that happens. And when we were writing the script, I showed Gumi, who was credited with the screenplay. I showed him pictures of Tim, and so we had him in mind when we were writing it. I hadn't found the character of Brynja, who is the main character, although they pretty much have the same weight. And then when I started the casting process for Brynja's character, I sent Tim all the additions because I was trying to, you know, sort of match the actors, both sort of physically and also to find somebody that would, you know, would maybe have sort of a natural connection, because it's the worst thing that you can do, worst thing that can happen, you're doing a film about two people who are supposed to, you know, connect, is that there is actually no connection, no matter how good an
actor. Or too much connection, right?
or too much connection, yeah, exactly.
Because I felt that with this relationship that they shared was also enriched by these little moments of awkwardness that felt very real when it comes to two people getting to know each other for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. And they're both brilliant actors. And I flew Tim in for rehearsals. So, I mean, that's also a big part of it. You need with something like this, you need to be able to rehearse your actors, to discuss the roles, to discuss the underlying themes of that are sort of the major themes of the movie. With Loewe, who plays the character of Brynja, she has a history of anxiety disorder, and so we talked about that a lot, and then we discussed with Tim, and Tim was a big part of also in the casting of Loewe. So there was already, you know, there's already, you know, in the first meeting, there was already camaraderie between them, and that's something that you then just build on. And like, that was my biggest fear was, okay, what if they just don't connect at all? I mean, then the film is ruined. It's not going to work. But we got lucky. And I mean, I did everything in my power that I could to exactly sort of create this atmosphere. And it's also because it's a, you know, it's a low budget. It's a very small crew. And I tried to create an atmosphere of just family on set, when everybody, you know, is very gung ho, working for little money. So we, not just with those actors, but also with the crew, that we're all in this together, like for real, not like when the politicians are saying it. This time it's sort of, you know, real.
And like you said earlier, this film was shot in your guest house, so that also helps, right?
That helps. And I mean, we you know, my wife, who's a writer, novelist, she just loved, you know, having people here. I mean, our household is very, sometimes like a train station. We got lots of guests. We get lots of people. Of course, we have, you know, we're both working artists. We run this guest house. And everybody here, like, unfortunately, my wife is an artist, so she knows what all this is about. And so everybody joins. Everybody is working towards the same goal. And my daughter is in it. You know, you just you use all the resources you have and do the best you can. Yeah. And the atmosphere is so important. I don't think you need to, in order to create a masterpiece, that you need to be an asshole. I think
no,
you can
definitely
be nice.
All right, Martin. So thanks very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.